Hey everyone, welcome into a daily editorial here on the KE Report. We're kicking off today's daily editorials with Steve Todoruk, investment executive and geologist over at Sprott Global. Now, Steve, look, we chat regularly, and I think a lot of our listeners know that you are very much focused on discovery plays in the resource sector. You like early on discoveries, and you like riding that wave higher, and hopefully riding that the whole way to a takeout, some sort of M&A transaction to create that liquidity event. Now, we have talked about how you trade certain stocks sometimes as discoveries are building, but let's skip to the end here in the M&A activity or potential for any stock, especially a new discovery. Look, M&A has been relatively slow in the sector, and we can make a number of reasons for that. Either around COVID or just around the stage of the market. But either way, like when we do see a flurry of M&A, sometimes that means that we're at the top of a market. So definitely the slow M&A not signifying top of a market right now. But when you see a discovery that is made and the company is building it out, what is the process that you like to see the company, first of all, doing the work, but then also packaging the project and potential mine for M&A transaction? What do you like to see? What's the progress there, Steve?
Well, ideally, to keep my life as simple as possible, I like to see a brand new discovery announced, usually that first good drill hole. And then I like to see the junior drill it out, define the ultimate size of the deposit as quick as they can. That usually takes about 2 years of drilling, and then bang, right there, have a big company come in and take them over. You know, in essence, the company's still just drilling. I can use that takeover as a my exit strategy, and then I can move on to the next play if you want. If a company gets to the point where they've delineated the deposit, it's not getting any bigger, if they're not taking over, now they've got to start to go down a different road. You know, start to do metallurgy, preliminary economic assessment studies, and if they're still not taking over, full-on feasibility studies. And along that way, they've usually got to change their management team. It takes a different skill set. You know, when you start to do PEAs and feasibility studies, during the discovery days, you're just drilling holes. You just need geologists on staff pretty well. So the more complicated the story gets, I've got to work harder trying to stay on top of all that. And then again, you know, if you've got a good deposit, there's very few good deposits that the majors want to acquire. So at any given time during those, you know, later years, you can get your takeover, and that's my exit strategy. Sell into, you know, all the liquidity of the major coming in to buy all the shares to get 100% of the company.
So, Steve, that's kind of an interesting point in the life cycle of a mining company. You know, they've made the discovery, they've grown their resources, and as you say, now they're at this different stage as a development stage company where they're doing the economic studies, they're doing the network, they're doing the permitting. They're starting to toy around with the idea of raising the capital and the capex needed to build the project. What happens when, like we see often, there's dozens and dozens of companies in the gold and silver space and even in the copper space that have development stage assets. They're doing this work. They get orphaned. What do you do during those quiet, slow periods? Do you, for, you know, and the people that you advise, do you recommend they hold on to a core position and maybe exit some of it to go after a new discovery play? Or is it worth holding for the candle? Because it could be years. It could be 2, 3, 5 years that they get stuck in that phase. So how do you handle the doldrums there in that development stage, orphan phase?
You better love the deposit they have. You know, it better be really top quality if you're going to hang on to it there. If you've got the utmost confidence that one day that should be a mine, if that's taking a number of years, it's giving you exposure to the commodity. If you think gold or silver, copper is going to go up and you're sitting on one of the best stocks, everybody agrees that this junior has one of the best deposits out there, you know, wait it out. You know, commodity prices rise, that's going to push the share price up in all likelihood. So it's not like it's just sitting there dead. If you've got a low grade deposit, which, you know, was found decades ago, that's a different situation, and I try not to be involved in those stories. I know a lot of investors are, and that's, you know, I would question, well, why'd you get in the first place? You know, you're asking how long you should stay in, or should you be patient? It's like, why'd you buy it in the first place?
That is a question I think that all investors need to ask themselves on a regular basis for the stocks that they hold, because sometimes when the narrative maybe doesn't change, and quite frankly, if the story slows, then investors that do ask themselves that question can actually bail from a company. Steve, when it comes to M&A, one of the arguments why we have seen slow M&A is because these major companies have taken the tact of investing in companies, taking an equity stake, either 10 or 19% of the outstanding shares, and that's their in to the project potentially. But we haven't seen too many of these companies that hold 20% go ahead and make acquisitions or fully buy out the company. We've seen a few, but right now a lot of companies, again, are just touting the fact that majors hold a somewhat significant portion of shares. What's your takeaway from this new strategy coming from the majors?
Well, actually, the majors have been doing that for a long, long time. It's not something brand new. Sometimes it's a major will put money into a junior because there's connections. You know, maybe the guy running the junior used to work for the big company. So big companies all right with the project, so they'll put some money in. Rather than sitting, you know, all in cash, you know, make some investments. Hopefully there's some kind of a fit or a strategic reason for doing it. But just because a major does a private placement, a junior does not mean there's going to be a discovery or a takeover. You know, major, a lot of times, a lot of us shake our heads like, why did the major, you know, put money into that deal? Like, there's, we don't see any fit at all.
Well, Steve, let me ask you this. We've also seen examples where companies are priced to a point where many people think they can't be taken over, but we've seen a few mergers of equals in the marketplace over the last 2 or 3 years. It's actually becoming more common where a company will use its paper to acquire what would be considered a pricey project or a pricey development stage project. Do you think we may see more of these kind of mergers where it may not be a cash offer from one of the big boys, but it may be a mid-tier company that uses its paper and, you know, a partial ownership to acquire what would be a larger project for them to pay cash for? Do you think we'll see an increase in that kind of M&A?
I don't know if it'll be an increase. I think we'll see some of it. Start with the two big boys, Newmont and Barrick. You know, for decades, we've all been saying, why don't they merge? You know, there's so much money that can be saved in synergies there that it's crazy. You know, so we've seen a step closer to that with their Nevada partnership type of thing, and it wouldn't surprise me if we see some more getting closer in that story. In the silver space, you know, and the gold space and the copper, all these big companies need to be thinking of their pipeline, you know, 10, 20, 30 years down the road. And if they get to a point where they can't see anything, if there's no significant new deposit that anyone's finding to acquire, you know, that can generate some mergers of equals. You know, that'll extend the mine lives and at the same time create some good cost-saving synergies.
Does that mean we need to be looking a bit more to some of these mid-tiers where the market caps have run higher, not so much the majors, but the mid-tiers doing some more transactions or significant transactions that actually benefit both parties?
Well, I guess I'm asking, why do you want to consider that? You know, if you're trying to put a list of companies together that might be subject to mergers and acquisitions or takeovers, you know, if it's a takeover, That usually means the bigger company's going to offer takeover premium, which is usually 25 to 50% above what the smaller company's trading at the time. If you're happy with that return on your investment, then explore that possibility. You know, it's not very difficult to put together a list of maybe 20 juniors that could happen to. But I'm going to hazard a guess that you won't see too much activity in that list of 20 companies.
Okay. Hey, fair enough. What about different resources? Like, I know most people are probably thinking we're talking more precious metals companies, but I know you follow some of the base metal explorers as well, and there's a lot of other resource sectors that have come on the radar and are getting attention. Do you see M&A picking up outside of, let's say, precious metals?
Well, again, you need to have basically a fairly or a brand new, good-looking, high-quality deposit of whatever commodity, whether it's nickel or uranium. palladium. As long as it's a good quality depositing, and if it's big, there should be a buyer. You know, so that creates that merger and acquisition. The reality is, most of the mining companies and exploration companies that are out there are focused in the gold space, and so that's where you're undoubtedly or resoundingly going to get the most merger and acquisition activity. After gold, I'd probably say copper miners in the copper space, but you know there's not anywhere near the length of list of copper exploration companies that there are for gold. And then there's very few silver. So everything says most M&A is going to happen in the gold space.
Yeah, fair enough. That's where a lot of people are focused for M&A. What about jurisdictions too? We're seeing a lot of issues down in South America, but that seems to be a trend, and that doesn't actually necessarily eliminate M&A activity happening in South America. But look, there's also a number of good projects that are being developed in what are considered tier one deposits too. Do you think that when M&A starts to pick up, it's going to be focused more in tier one jurisdictions or other jurisdictions?
Well, obviously, it's preferable to have merger and acquisition in safe jurisdiction. That's part of the story, that the big companies want lower risk. If I had to make a guess right now, I had to pick a country where we may well see most of the M&A, and I'm not predicting a lot, I'd say it's going to be in Western Australia. You know, all of Australia, for the most part, is very mining friendly, quite low risk, but the amount of exploration and the success that they've had finding brand new deposits of gold and copper and palladium is, I'm puzzled why we're getting so much of it out there. That's a great thing, because you've got everything you want. You know, you got low risk, you got high quality deposits, you got big mining companies. All the ingredients are there for good activity.
Okay. Well, Steve, we'll wrap it up here, in the sense that I think we've covered the M&A or potential M&A activity that could come out of the sector. But again, your focus being still on the early stage discoveries and getting them bought out early on, because you are right. Once a company enters that life cycle of economic studies and even talking about moving into development, that's a long time period and a lot of work that they have to go through. And unfortunately, if it's not in the perfect cycle, the perfect timing of that cycle, then the deal just doesn't seem to happen and that project just gets recycled in the next cycle. Steve, great chatting with you. One thing I do always want to note is that Steve reaches out, or loves when all of you reach out to him and ask questions on companies in your portfolio. He is able to help you out in that sense. On these interviews, we're not able to discuss individual companies, but if you email him, and I will post his email below this interview, then you can open up a discussion on companies that have your interest, and Steve will be very upfront with what he thinks of those companies. Steve, as always, great chatting with you, buddy. I hope you have a great rest of your week, and we'll chat again in another couple weeks.
Okay, thanks again, and good talking to you guys.